Forbidden Panel welcomes you to Panelcast, Forbidden Panel's weekly podcast featuring movie and comic news and reviews. And now, your hosts, AJ and Brian.
Hey, this is Brian, and welcome to the Panelcast.
Hey, everyone, this is AJ, and welcome to our 82nd episode. In this episode, we'll be catching up with the news as usual.
And I'm going to be reviewing Walking Dead number 84, as well as The Pound number 1.
While I talk about the great PSN debacle of 2011, as well as X-23.
All of this after our first break.
Guys, this is Daniel Corey. I'm the founder of Danger Cat Creative Studio, and I want to tell you real quick about my upcoming comic, Moriarty, The Dark Chamber. It's about Professor Moriarty, the arch nemesis of Sherlock Holmes. I'm working with artist Anthony Diachidua on it, letterer Dave Lampier. Please go to DangerCat.com and check it out. That's DangerCat.com. And please go over to Kickstarter.com. We're running a campaign right now to try to raise funds for the production of the book. So, you know, shoot us an email, let us know how you like it, and we'll see you on the web.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Panelcast. So, Brian, what's going on in the news?
Well, apparently Zorro is coming back in a post-apocalyptic reboot. So, be prepared to see Antonio Banderas playing an old man wandering the desert.
Really?
No, I don't know. I don't know. I wasn't able to actually find any details of what the story is going to be about, other than they're just planning on making a post-apocalyptic reboot.
That sounds very stupid.
It does sound kind of stupid, but it could work. I mean,
stupidly.
Stranger things have worked. But yeah, I'm not a big Zorro fan. I don't know. I just... never really cared for the sort of like action swashbuckling type movies. It's just not my thing, really.
Alrighty then. Moving on. Captain America shoots as the Avengers begins, reports Dark Horizons. Captain America the First Avenger did some quick shooting of what's suggested as being the post-credits Avengers tie-in sequence in New York City's Times Square this past Sunday. Considering this was being shot at one of the busiest places in the U.S. on a minor holiday weekend without any real secrecy, trying to protect what was being shot, there are countless photos and videos going around showing what was done. Mostly on display was Nick Fury, Samuel Jackson, talking to a buffed-up Steve Rogers, Chris Evans, in what looks like the white t-shirt and tan slacks he dons for a good portion of the film. Other photos show him running and ducking traffic. Shooting on Captain America wrapped months ago, while director Joss Whedon confirmed on his blog that shooting on the Avengers started kicking off on Monday. This means an Avengers script is now locked, and so this Captain scene is likely either a quick reshoot or additional scene being added together for the two films in a more cohesive way. The photos and video that's up are done by cell phones, so their qualities are really, really bad. You can't really hear any of the dialogue, what's going on. It's mostly just the background noises and voices that you can hear. But you can see video of them chatting it up in downtown New York. Joss Whedon also released the news based on the fact, and as well as a set photo of the Avengers movie set, saying that it began filming today, so on Monday, that is. So, yeah, they're hopping right back on it. It's nice to see that Chris Evans is staying as Captain America, as well as any of the other returning guests that they have. So,
yeah, it's also good to see that Marvel's actually putting a lot of effort into sort of making all of the movies into a cohesive universe.
Yeah, them trying to actually exist in the same tell universe or what have you, and tie together with each other is something that I've been waiting for a long time, and I know a lot of other fans have been doing as well. Though with the addition of Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk as opposed to Norton, kind of switches it up a bit, but who knows, maybe we'll see a new Hulk come out of it, a new film of the Hulk come out of it with Ruffalo as Bruce Banner.
Some exciting news for me, and I'm sure for probably a lot of other people as well. Portal 2 is going to be getting some DLC coming this summer. I did recently get my hands on a copy of the game and have been playing the hell out of it. So I'm really excited to see some new content come out. I think Portal 2 might be one of the few games that I'd actually buy downloadable content for.
Are you not a purchaser of downloadable content?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not against the idea of it, but most of the games that are out there that have downloadable content, for the most part, it just doesn't seem worth what you're getting for it. But as far as Valve goes, Valve usually is pretty reliable in terms of the quality of the stuff that they release. So I would think that the downloadable content for Portal is going to be worthwhile.
See, I'm a big fan of it. You know, I figure after play, especially with multiplayer games, after playing on those same maps time and time and time again, it gets real old and you get stuck with people that you know, campers or what have you, that know where to hide and all their favorite sweet spots and what have you. So the downloadable content adds a new variable to the equations.
I'm not against downloadable content, you know, in general. I support the idea and I don't have a problem with it. It's just, for the most part, it just my experience in the past with it has been something that I just haven't really felt the need to actually buy any of it. But
That's
in
probably
this
because most
case,
of the time when it comes out, you're poor.
well, yeah, that's true. I don't really have the, you know, disposable income to throw at it, but Portal 2, I'll probably make an exception.
So moving on, Muriel Enos, who plays Detective Sarah Linden on the AMC show The Killing, which is pretty freaking awesome, by the way, is set to play Brad Pitt's wife in World War Z at Paramount Pictures. Mark Forster directs this adaptation of Max Brooks's novel, set 10 years after a global zombie epidemic. Excuse me. Brad Pitt is playing a UN worker collecting testimonials from various people around the world about the events of the war. Enos would play his wife and a mother of two girls. Shooting kicks off in June in London and Malta. While that's not really super exciting news, what should be taken from that is that they're actually moving forward with the World War Z film, which I'm very excited about.
Oh, yeah.
Having talked to Max Brooks on several occasions at various cons, I know that he's very anxious for it to get started and rolling and filming. But I am disappointed to see that Brad Pitt will be taking the role that Max Brooks has portrayed in the audiobook, in that of the UN reporter walking around and talking to all the different people.
I don't know. That doesn't bother me too much because, as far as that role goes, I mean, yeah, I know that, you know. At least from the audiobook, you kind of picture Max Brooks being in that role, but anybody really could be in that role. It's not a huge part. I think most of it's going to rest on the stories of the other characters and how that gets portrayed.
Oh, absolutely. But I mean, for those of you who have not heard the audiobook of World War Z, and I think we've stated this a few times on the show previously, it is, in my opinion, kind of better than the book itself. The production value that went into it, the voice actors that they got
Yeah.
for it, and just everything about it it's a complete awesome experience. And it's one of those when I'm listening to it, I shut everything else off and I just lay down and I listen to it because it's just so phenomenal.
It's one of those books that I tell people about and they say, "Oh, I don't like to listen to audiobooks." I'm like, "Well, listen to the World War Z audiobook
Right, and
because it'll
you'll change
probably
your
change your
mind.
mind."
Yeah, exactly. It'll change your mind. They did such an amazing job with it. So, like I said, I'm glad to see that the film is moving forward, and hopefully, I don't know, I'll be spoiled because of the audiobook, and I'll go in expecting something like that, and I know I'll be disappointed, but I think I'll still be happy to see that the book itself is being adapted into a film. How well Brad Pitt comes off as such a non-essential character will be, you know, something to see, but who knows, maybe it
He's
will.
done it before. I mean, like, look at his role in like 12 Monkeys, you know, something like that. I mean,
Yeah, but his role in 12 Monkeys, how little he was in it, he still garnered an Academy nomination for it because he did such a
right.
phenomenal job with it. He stole that movie.
Well, yeah, I guess as long as he doesn't steal the World War Z movie, then it'd probably be better. Because the role that he's playing is supposed to be more of a subdued character. You're supposed to focus more on the stories.
Right, because World War Z is actually a very intense character study about what happens during that with all the different players that get involved in it. So, I don't know, we'll see.
Got a couple of different stories. I'm just going to mention both at the same time. Both Titan Publishing and Dark Horse have come out with their own comic sales apps. And I've noticed that it seems like pretty much every publisher now is starting to release their own online stores and their own comic sales apps. And I'm starting to wonder if maybe it's going to end up getting a little flooded with every publisher having their own little app that you have to download in order to buy comics.
Yeah, it's getting really ridiculous. I mean, this is one of the reasons why I like the things like Comical and Sea Display. You know, and that those are both free programs, so you can read comic books in formats that are free as well, so that you can have one universal program to read all these different comic books. And the fact that they're individualizing the comic books for purchases as long as you have the apps to read them kind of makes digital downloading retarded at that point. Mm-hmm. I mean, by the time you're done paying for everything, you've paid for a trade paperback at this point. So you might as well just go out and buy it anyway.
Yeah, it seems like just the path that it's taking, everybody's trying to jump onto the digital distribution, but nobody's really going about it the right way. And I would like to see a little bit more uniformity come in.
Apparently the police are coming after you, Brian.
It's the perils of living next to the fire department.
See, the problem I'm seeing with this is that they're trying to make nothing but pure profit. Digital distribution is, in fact, nothing but pure profit. As comic book publishers ourselves, we realize that in printing comic books, you pay a certain fee to print, and then you mark it up so that you can make some sort of return on your investment. Whereas digital comic books and digital distribution, it takes me 5 seconds to get the comic book together in a digital form, place it up on our store, and sell it. And everything we make off of that point is pure profit. And
I mean, like, obviously, there's costs for things like
programming and all that stuff, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But those are pretty minimal, especially compared to the amount of resources it takes to actually distribute the comic, which is zero.
Exactly. So at this point, they're basically making nothing but pure profit. So they're trying to increase that amount by creating own applications and making it application-based, so that you can only read these comic books in that manner.
Right. And I should mention that for myself personally, I don't have an issue with being able to buy directly from the publisher to have the money go to the company producing the comics, you know, have them get more of a cut from it.
Right.
My biggest problem, I think, is just the lack of uniformity. Like, it seems that they should be working more on having everybody kind of collaborate on some sort of unified standard. Like with things like, you know, when CDs and stuff came out and, you know, DVDs, there was a lot of different formats, and eventually things kind of settled into a particular format. Or with things like MP3 and all the other digital formats that came out, it just seems like that's really what they should be doing, instead of everybody just having their own proprietary apps, because that makes it much more inconvenient for the consumers, honestly.
Well, even still with MP3s, some MP3s won't play on iPod or won't play on Windows. It'll only play on one or the other. You know, they're still dealing with that issue,
with
too.
With DRM and stuff.
Yeah, well, that's still DRM, but I mean, it just depends. You know, it's still...
Yeah, no, I agree, though. I think stuff should, you know, formats for anything, whether it's physical or digital, should be as universal as possible.
Right.
And then, you know, focus more on finding a way to just get that to as many people as you can, rather than having your own app, you know, just to be jumping on the bandwagon.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Like Brian said, I'm a huge fan of digital downloads. I'm a huge fan of digital comic books. I love taking my laptop to a coffee shop and reading, like, volumes of comic books in one day, as opposed to having to lug all that stuff around. But at the same time, I am also a fan of purchasing trade paperbacks of the comic books I like in order to get it out to my friends or people who have not read it. And also to support the comic book companies in publishing. But it's annoying when you have to buy all these different little apps just to read the same comic book on different formats, you know, or different comic books in different formats because you have multiple readers and stuff. It's getting annoying. If you're going to have an iPad or an iPhone or a Mac product, have one application that can read all those formats. If you're going to have Windows, have one application that's going to read all those formats. If you're going to have Google, have the one application. I understand if you're going to have, you know, multi-platform applications in order to read them. That's understandable. But when I have a PC and I've got 5 applications to read 10 different comic books, it's retarded, and it's costly at that point, you know?
Yeah, it definitely is. And I mean, from one hand, I kind of understand that companies are looking to place restrictions on their product because they want, you know, to try to control their content as much as they can. But ultimately, I think a lot of this just ends up hurting the consumers more than it hurts anyone else, because the people that aren't going to pay for it are going to find a way around it anyway. So I say, you know, make it as available as you can.
Right.
Because you're going to make money off of it if you do that, if you do it right.
Right. I mean, it's bad. I don't want to have to buy a DC app to read DC comic books, a Marvel app to read Marvel comic books, and so on and so forth. You know?
Right, right.
It's just too much. I just want to read my fracking comic books. That's all there is to it. Anyway, I think we've dwelled on this point enough. Moving forward, so apparently Scream 5 is not happening. The hope of Scream 4 was that it would launch a new series of films. Decidedly mixed reviews and underwhelming box office, however, may have mixed those plans. Moviehole spoke with a contact at Dimension Films who says the Scream franchise will likely end here, at least for the moment, and plans for a so-called trilogy stops here. However, they did add that the film series may have a future as a direct-to-DVD franchise a la American Pie. With a production budget of $40 million, Scream 4 opened at $18.7 million, almost half that of its two immediate predecessors. Its second weekend wasn't much help either, the film plummeting by 62.4% despite little to no competition. With the global haul added, it is currently sitting at $48 million. The film isn't likely to score nearly the $160 or $170 million global haul each by Scream 2 and Scream 3. A source has responded saying, "Guys, you may be correct, but at this stage we haven't decided anything about Scream 5. Appreciate the kind words on the film." Here's the problem. I have yet to see Scream 4. Everybody I know that has seen it says it's awesome, but everybody that's seen it are fans of the entire series. And so that's what's happening. They're not pulling in any new people. With movies, horror movies nowadays being so focused on the gore genre and the disgusting factor, movies like Scream 4 just aren't fitting into it, which is sad considering, I mean, what does that say about our society and that, you know, we're picky about our horror movies, you know? But yeah. We'll see what happens. And if it goes the way of American Pie, I mean, as long as they do it right and they don't do it like American Pie, I don't think there should be a problem. Though at that point, they're looking at just...
Well, I think the fact that they're not just going straight to video with it kind of helps.
Right.
Because that's where American Pie ended up, which is a bunch of, you know, cheesy straight-to-video movies.
Well, they are coming out with the fourth adaptation to film of the American Pie series, like a reunion-type movie, and I'm just not caring about it, so... It's so oversaturated, that's why I hope they don't do it Scream. Now, it did somewhat work for the Hellraiser franchise in that now there's 8 sequels out there, and the direct-to-video sequels were pretty good. I enjoyed them because they were more psychological as they were gory. But obviously it wasn't enough to garner returning to the mainstream. Though what's happening with the Hellraiser remake still remains to be seen. Brian?
For anybody that's on the East Coast, Boston Comic Con is going to be running from April 30th to May 1st. So if anybody can get to Boston, go ahead and go to that. I'm going to try to make it at least one day. Boston's not too far away from where I live, but unfortunately, you know.
Money.
I'm a starving artist.
Who can't draw?
Yeah. Not well.
Shooting on The Dark Knight Rises is set to take place in Jodhpur, India. The Information and Broadcasting Ministry has reportedly given the go-ahead to US-based Cape Road production to lens part of the next Batman flick in the Blue City. The unique locale is dominated by two geographical features, the imposing hilltop, Marigahar Fort, and the blue-painted houses that surround it. The fort itself has been used on the film before, most recently in Tarsem's acclaimed The Fall. The news comes as photos pop up online this week of actors Tom Hardy and Christian Bale. The former has obviously been working on shows off a beefier frame in photos, though there's no sign of a costume. Tom Hardy has been just massively increasing his build, and he looks like a monster. Like, he looks like he could play Zangief in Street Fighter at this point, which is weird because, you know, he's a fairly skinny guy. The photos of Christian Bale, which look like he's been on the receiving end of a major punch-up, is more contentious of some have as some have suggested it's a makeup test shoot for the film, while others think it's around the same time from an earlier movie as Rose, or his most recent project, 13 Flowers of Nanjing. The film's six-month shoot is set to kick off next month. I'm super amped about this movie, just so you guys know.
Yeah, they need to hurry up and make it so I can watch it already.
Right.
All right, well, why don't we go ahead and take a quick break, and then we'll be back with some more news.
Be right back.
Hey, this is Bash and Crash from the SoCal Scene.
And we're here reminding you to keep an eye out for any and all SoCal Scene production shows, bringing you the best in local and live entertainment and some of the best local venues in Southern California. Keep an eye out for some of the coolest shows that we've got coming out featuring the best local artists in the area.
If you don't like it, turn it off!
And welcome back to the panel cast. Why am I singing so much on this episode? I don't know.
Maybe we should just do an entirely musical episode.
That would be amazing. Then we could say things like amazing instead of amazing. But no dance numbers.
No.
Okay, well, it was your idea.
Well, it was my idea to have a musical, but I think we should go professional with it and get Julie Newmar come in and or Julie Taymor. Why did I say Julie Newmar? I don't know.
Because you were thinking Batman the musical at the same time? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Bring in Julie Taymor since they fired her off of Spider-Man the musical and just have her write Forbidden Panel Cast the musical.
Yeah, but that just means one of us has to die.
Well, I'm okay with that.
As long as it's you.
Anyway, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty excited for May 7th.
Yes, that means it's 8 days before my birthday.
It's not what I was thinking of.
You never think of my birthday.
Nah.
Happy late birthday, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I just turned 407.
Sweet.
No, May 7th is Free Comic Book Day.
Yay!
And, yeah, I'm always excited to be able to go and get some free comics. I just have to actually find a comic book shop around here since there apparently aren't any.
I'm excited because Forbidden Panel will be signing at Four Color Fantasies in Rancho Cucamonga. Haha.
Yeah, well, Forbidden Panel and Four Color have always had something going on for Free Comic Book Day, so I'm actually excited too. I wish I could be there. I wish I could have been there for all the past ones as well.
I can't believe that this is going to be our third one. That's what's creeping me out. 3 years of doing Free Comic Book Day. That means 3 years we have actually been publishing stuff and had our shit together somewhat.
Yeah.
So that's what's exciting to me. But for the fans themselves, I mean, Free Comic Book Day is an amazing day. It's a day where you get to go out and pick up a wonderful amount of free comic books put up from all kinds of different comic book companies. This year, we'll see the release of Super Dinosaur from Robert Kirkman, his new title, one that I will be reviewing later on the show. You'll also, if you come down to Rancho, you'll be able to get a whole bunch of free posters from us based off of our new webcomic called Security. So, yeah, I'm excited for that. But, yeah, Brian, it would be awesome if you were able to make it down here. And maybe one of these years you will once you realize that Massachusetts sucks and California is the hellhole and you have no choice but to come back. So.
Well, yeah, I think it mostly just comes down to the fact that I don't actually have the money to do it.
Whatever.
If I had the money for a ticket, I would be there.
Yeah, that's always your excuse. Money. Yeah.
It is always my excuse.
So, yeah, if you can't make it out to Rancho Cucamonga Four Color Fantasies on May 7th, which you should because it's a huge extravaganza, we're going to have almost everybody from Boom Studios, as well as Mark Wade, and yeah, just lots of people.
Yeah,
but if you can't,
Four Color always goes all out for this thing. So
last year we had 2,000 people show up, and it was just a phenomenal experience. But if you can't make it out to Four Color Fantasies, go to any comic book store. Free Comic Book Day is worldwide, so you can go to any local comic book store and get at least 4 or 5 comics for free. Now, granted, there are amended editions of the comic books that you would normally see on the shelf for sale. But still, free is free, and be grateful for that. Free Comic Book Day was originally designed to garner interest into the comic book industry by letting people read short amended titles of comic books that are out there in order to hopefully gain a new fan club or gain new fans for that comic book. But it's a great opportunity now because it's been changed into something more. Stores like Four Colored Fantasies and Golden Apple have changed it into more of a festival environment where they invite artists and creators from comic book communities to come out and sign, do sketch artists, and just meet people and try and get them intrigued into the comic book world as well, which is what we do when we participate with Four Colored Fantasies, just trying to introduce people in the Forbidden Panel and the world of Zombie Kill Squad and any of the other titles that we have out. So again, if you can't make it out there, just go to any comic book store and you'll be able to partake in this fun day. And I'm done ranting.
All right. Well, what kind of stories do you got for us?
Arnold Schwarzenegger and his agency reps at the CAA are currently shopping to the studios a package which includes the rights to produce a new Terminator sequel. Fast Five director Justin Lin will helm and Robert Quart will produce, though no screenwriter has come on board yet and there's no storyline to speak of. Hedge fund Pacific War, who won the rights to the franchise last year, would be part of any new production and would likely demand a significant cut. Rights to the franchise are currently set to revert to the original creator, James Cameron, in 2018. So, should it break ahead, the film is such a long way off that other projects the former governor has been linked to, the drug-themed actioneer The Last Stand and the prisoner escape movie The Tomb, are still set to come first. Basically, Arnold got, you know, stepped down from politics and now he's shopping around hardcore to find a job and make some money. To see him return to the...
Yeah, because he doesn't have any money.
Well, you know what I mean. To see him return to the Terminator franchise would be kind of cool. I mean, I'll geek out a little bit about it. I can't lie about it. But I think at this point, if they don't come with a proper Terminator storyline and proper Terminator film, then they shouldn't bother at all.
Yeah, because, I mean, honestly, I mean, he's still fit, but the guy is a lot older than he was.
Well, it won't take him much to get back into shape now that he's not involved in politics anymore and his time isn't occupied. But my concern is, as much as I love Terminator Salvation, I know a lot of other people love Terminator Salvation as well, it left a lot of open-ended questions, which have yet to be addressed. And that's what they need to take care of. They need to close the circuit and finalize the series so that we can have all of our answers and make it one cohesive storyline. It's just too wide open right now. So if Arnold does return to it, that's what he needs to push on. He needs to focus on that. Just as long as he doesn't show up in the new Conan, I'm fine.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they won't just decide to reboot the series starting with Terminator 3 again.
Yeah, I don't want to see a reimagining of the same movie we've already seen, so.
Well, here's a bit of sad news, is that apparently some thieves decided to steal the marker that marks the house where Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster created Superman. So far, it hasn't given any reason as to why. I don't think the authorities are even sure who actually took it.
Obviously why, it's because it's a Superman thing. With the launch of Superman 900 that came out this week, you know...
It definitely could be related to that, so it's a definite possibility.
Yeah, well, people are people, and geeks are geeks, so we'll do almost anything to get that stuff. But you watch, it'll show up at a random con, and you know, some idiot will come in and try to have it get signed, and we'll just bum rush him and kill him. So, if you've been around the internet this past week, you've noticed that a lot of different trailers of X-Men First Class have been popping up. The online film site world has been going a bit insane, posting all sorts of variations of X-Men First Class, international teaser trailers that have been appearing. At last count, at least 6 different versions exist or have been linked to recently. All the variations usually contained only 1 or 2 new shots added onto the first international trailer released a while back, leading to even fans probably feeling burnt out to some extent. It's unfortunate as that took away any enthusiasm for the launch of the domestic full trailer, which came out on Tuesday, which is a shame as that trailer sported a lot of new footage and worked great. When word came out today of yet another international version having hit, the 7th variation, nobody's really having any interest in linking to it or mentioning it, yet another clone. The good news is that it's not. Clocking in at 2 minutes and 48 seconds, this full-length international trailer, which shares many scenes from all the domestic trailers that have been out already, but make some edits and adds about 30 seconds of new footage, mostly stuff with the Inhuman characters in the film, being played by actors like Ray Wise, Michael Ironside, and Oliver Platt. That version is over at Dark Horizons right now, and you can check it out. I personally am looking at this trailer and think, what the fuck have they done to Havoc, and why do they keep trying to put Mystique in a movie? But I don't know. I'm happy to see that Banshee shows up. They show him, as well as some of the other characters. They've also gone on record as to say that this is not a reboot or a reimagining. It is an actual prequel that will tie in to the other film sequels that have been that have come out previously. So, yeah, they're trying to bank off of that and try and blend it in using footage from the first X-Men incorporated into this new prequel.
Yeah, but even the three movies that they made didn't really... There were four?
Yeah. Three X-Men and Wolverine.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, none of those movies, even the so-called trilogy, didn't seem to really tie together very well.
Yeah.
So, I don't see why they're trying so hard to make this fit into that. You know, it's like trying to pound a square peg through a circle hole.
But you know what the problem is that as much as complaints and bitches that all those movies got, I mean, me personally, I think they were horrible movies, but we still watch them because that's all we have to watch when we want X-Men on film. You know, and,
right, so we should be demanding something better instead of just being like, all right, well, I'll just take what you give me.
Absolutely, I cannot agree with you more, but they don't care at this point. They know they're making money just as long as they put an X on it, and that's what they're banking on. We could be wrong. This thing could be an Oscar-winning masterpiece, but I seriously fucking doubt that.
We'll see. Yeah, so going back to Superman news, here's a big thing. Superman is renouncing his U.S. citizenship in issue number 900. So that could very well be why that sign was stolen earlier. And I'm sure that we're probably going to end up seeing some sort of, you know, fear piece about this on Fox News.
I wouldn't be surprised. I have it. I have yet to read it, though. I've stopped reading Superman comic books a long time ago.
Yeah, I haven't been following up with it as well. But I have seen a couple of... If you Google, you'll find probably about 40,000 pages that have, you know, screenshots of the page in question.
Right.
But yeah. Apparently, he's gotten tired of having people attributing all of his actions to U.S. policy and has decided to renounce his U.S. citizenship to let everybody know that his services are for the world and not just for America.
And is that one written by Grant Morrison?
I don't know, actually.
It sounds like something he would do. I mean, you know, if you think about it politically, I mean, that's probably the best bet. You know, Superman needs to let people know that he's there for the world, not just for America. Though,
right.
Anything you've ever seen about Superman is him in America, you know, dealing with that stuff.
This is true.
Space.
I mean, right.
So,
you know, I mean, definitely when the character was first created, he was very much an American, but as they... you know, have gone and expanded on the story, and as Superman's popularity has expanded, it definitely makes more sense now to have him be sort of like a character for everybody and not just, you know, a character that's American.
Right.
Like, Captain America is one thing. That makes sense. His storyline makes sense to have him be an American.
And his name is Captain America.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's something that would be weird where if Captain America just decided that he didn't want to be an American anymore. But
there was
Superman,
time where he did that in comics, though. He was a man without a country. And that's when he became the Nomad.
Right. But he wasn't Captain America at that
right,
point.
Right.
Where Superman's still going to be Superman.
Right. Yeah. We'll see how it goes. I mean, I'm sure it'll blow up in everybody's face and there'll be some serious backlash coming out from it. But.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I expect a lot of backlash to come in from this. But at the same time, I think most people will get over it.
Speaking about real American heroes, the upcoming G.I. Joe sequel at Paramount Pictures has reportedly scored a title, G.I. Joe 2, Cobra Strikes. The Louisiana Office of Film and Video reportedly revealed that production on the sequel will begin in New Orleans this September and run through November. The statement, however, was later retracted, and a new one issued citing no official decision has been made regarding the film's shooting location. Still, the news was out there. Channing Tatum, Ray Park, and Lee Byung-hun are now all confirmed to be returning. John Hume helms the film, which will be currently targeted August 10th, 2012 release. The fact that they're making a sequel of this further depreciates what little...
What, they're not bringing Marlon Wayans back?
Who fucking knows? But it kills whatever faith I had in the film industry. I mean, seriously, this movie was horrible. They should just focus on Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow and make a two-hour fight fest of them, too. And I would be happy. Anything else would be crap.
Well, I'm sure everybody's probably been wondering when I was going to do this again. I've got a little story about a publisher called Blue Water Productions.
No, you don't say!
Yeah, they decided that, you know, the thousands and thousands of hours that the news has been talking about the royal wedding wasn't enough, so they're coming out with the comic book version. It's going to be called The Royals, Prince William and Kate Middleton. And, who cares? I don't care. I don't care. How?
You should just...
I barely even care.
The titles that they put out at this point. You should just be like, Blue Water, whatever you're doing this week, fuck you.
Yeah, that's what I should do. It would save time if I just said, fuck Blue Water, and then just moved on with it. Because I don't understand who buys these. Who? I mean, I don't even have the words to complain anymore.
Yeah. And yet you keep bringing them up on every show you can.
I do. Well, it's because it just...
It's your shtick now.
Yeah, it gets under my skin, and I can't not say something about it.
Awesome. Well, Brian, if you have no other news... We'll go ahead and take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking about a lot more shit that happens. Be right back.
Do you have dreams of world domination? You ever wanted to take on those pesky G.I. Joe jerk-offs, but really didn't know how to do that? Visit www.cobrathirdnightwatch.com. This is Major Boca of Cobra asking you, telling you to go to www.cobrathirdnightwatch.com. That's cobra3rdnightwatch.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the panel cast. See, I did that without singing, because we're not doing a musical panel cast.
Not for this episode, but in a future episode we will do an all musical panel cast.
No, we won't. Brian.
I'll make it happen.
Whatever, it'll be called the Brian Cast at that point. So yeah, this is the part of the show where we do reviews and stuff. It's kind of like the news section, but with more bitching. So, Brian, what you got?
Well, I figured the first thing that we could talk about is Walking Dead number 84.
Oh, yes. We talked about number 83 last week's show, and it was pretty harsh how it ended.
Yeah. So
Before we go forward, you should all know, while this is a review section, it's also very spoiler heavy. So if you don't want to know anything about it, you have yet to read it, skip forward.
Yeah, definitely. Because there's a lot of big things to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you haven't skipped forward by this point, then what you need to know is that, Walking Dead 83, one of the most important characters in the series,
Carl,
was gravely injured. Yes, Carl was shot.
Carl being the son of Rick Grimes, who's the main character in the series.
Yeah, so that's a big thing, because, I mean, at this point, Carl is really all that Rick has left. That's the only reason he keeps doing what he's doing, is because of Carl. So, to have something like this happen is a big deal, and then it just ends. Right with that.
Yeah, right.
So.
That's what was bullshit about it. I mean, you see this image of Carl with what looks like a hole through his skull from his eye socket, and then it's just over. And you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that was one of those issues where you're just like, oh shit. You know, and then you're just dying to know what happens next time around. So finally, as soon as Walking Dead 84 was available, I had to go read it. I mean, Walking Dead has kind of reached this point to me where I don't, you know, I am, like you said, I prefer to just grab the trades and kind of just get a story arc all at once.
Right.
But now it's just, I'm doing the weekly or monthly thing with The Walking Dead because I don't want to wait the extra time for the trade to come out.
Screw you, Kirkman! Screw you!
So in Walking Dead 84, we get a little bit more of a resolution. We find out that Carl's not dead yet. Yeah, his status is still kind of up in the air there. So we've got that. And then also a little bit more of the resolution with what happened with the walls of the city falling to the zombies.
This issue needs to be renamed Rick Grimes Gets Pissed.
Yeah, yeah. The ending of this is just kind of another one of those oh fuck moments because all hell kind of breaks loose and there's a bunch of badassery at the end.
There's a bunch of badassery throughout the whole comic. Like we said,
there is.
We're giving a spoiler alert, so in case you haven't read it, tough shit, because here we go. All right. Basically, the comic starts out with Rick busting through the door of like their local doctor and screaming, please save my son, please save my son, blah, blah, blah. In the meantime, he decides to get super pissed, grabs a hatchet, walks outside, and lays waste to all the zombies that are invading into their camp. And Michonne comes up and gets his back, as Michonne does. Michonne is like my second favorite character of The Walking Dead, because that bitch is bad.
Yeah, she's definitely one of the best characters in this series.
Right, she went from lawyer to fucking ninja-wielding assassin. You know, like, she just... I don't know. So, this is happening. Everybody else sees what Rick's doing and decides to join in. And by the end of the issue, they're all standing upon mounds and mounds of undead bodies just underneath them that they've all laid to waste. You know?
Mm-hmm.
They just went nuts and decimated everybody that got in their path. And Rick Grimes goes into a monologue at this point. He's like, no. Look, dude, I'm tired of running. I'm tired of having to relocate. I'm tired of having to do shit. I had it wrong. We have a home here. We have security. We have safety. We have comfort here. This is the first time we've actually felt normal since this whole fiasco began. So fuck that. I'm tired of running. We're going to fight for this. We're going to kill every single zombie that walks in. We're going to refortify our walls. And we're going to get back to having a normal sense of life, a feeling of humanity within our own souls. And that's what he does. He fucks everybody up. And it's just, it's awesome. It's the first time I've seen Rick Grimes just go off in the entire series. Most of the time, he's on defense. And this time, he goes on offense and just lays waste. And you see what a one-armed man can do when he's possessed with the near-death and emotion of his son.
Yeah.
His last string into sanity is sitting there on its deathbed, you know, or on the hospital bed. And he snaps. He finally snaps. And... yeah, I felt bad for the zombies. I'm like, damn, dude, all they want is some brains. Leave them alone. But they were just – Rick was just tearing it up, him and Michonne, back to back, as it should be. You know, it was just awesome.
Yeah, so definitely, I mean, a lot of action in the comic. But also, I really like the fact that, you know, Rick finally decides that, you know what, no. We're going to make this our home and we're going to fight for it. We're no more of this, you know, running around and just trying to move to the next place and move to the next place, move to the next place.
Right, and that's all giving credit to Robert Kirkman. The man realized that The Walking Dead is getting way too formulaic in that, you know, they find some peace, then they get overrun, they lose a few members of their party, and they keep booking it until they find the next safe haven. And that's how it's been throughout the entire series. 84 issues of the series have pretty much been of that formula.
Which is fine because, you know, it's kind of made sense with the events that have happened in the comic
absolutely.
So far.
But you got to realize, like, the only time the zombies have ever made a real major difference and caused them to run has been in the beginning of the series. Every other time has been human error.
Right.
You know? Be it the mayor tearing down the prison walls, or, you know, some other shit going on, it's always human error that's causing them to run. And now, right. You know, Rick's like, fuck that. It's time to move on. And that's, again, that's a credit to Robert Kirkman. He's tired of being so formulaic that he wants to change the game. And he wants to let you know that, yo, hey, we've established this baseline. Now let's see what happens when we turn it the other way. You know, so I got to give a credit to Robert Kirkman. He did a great job in writing this.
Right. And, you know, and it's not one of those things either where it's going to bother me because, oh, now, you know, they're going to become complacent and something. Because you know something's going to happen. I mean, that's just Robert Kirkman's style. Is like, even though the people are going to rebuild their society and they're going to get things, there's still going to be some kind of a drama. There always is. Because like we've said, throughout most of the series, the drama has been generated by people anyway. As long as there's still people alive, there's going to be some drama to be had.
Right.
And Robert Kirkman. I get so excited that I start stumbling over my words. But yeah, Robert Kirkman writes so well that it doesn't bother me that he's changing, you know, he's changing up the style and the formula.
No, it's something I've been wanting to see for a long time. Like, it's been as wonderful as the series is and as easily defendable as the series is, I have found myself having to defend it, you know, against its formula. But now with this, it's, again, it's like, ha, told you, motherfuckers.
Yeah,
all
it
you
feels
have to do
like
is
the
wait.
Story is like maturing, you know. There's a sense that the story is progressing as well as the characters.
Exactly. And so, like, I'm fucking happy about it. It's awesome. Good job, Kirkman, you asshole. And I call you asshole out of love.
Yeah, I call you Robin out of love.
Because he wishes you were a girl so he could bang you.
All right, we're getting a little too ahead of yourself.
So, yeah. Again, it was awesome. And in the next segment, I'll be reviewing Robert Kirkman's latest thing in Super Dinosaur. So, which is going to be kind of cool. But, all right, Brian, so moving on, what else have you read?
The other thing that I read was I saw an announcement up. I spend a lot of time on Reddit, so I have like a comic section. And somebody posted a thing that there was a free comic, so I'm like, cool, I'll check it out. That comic was produced by Frozen Beach Studios or Frozen Beach Publishers. I think it's Publishers, I don't know. Frozen Beach something. But the name of the comic is called The Pound. Written by Steven Nilsen and drawn by Carl Waller. Essentially, the story of The Pound is about these two guys that work for the Animal Control Center for Cincinnati. End up getting laid off because of the shitty economy and everything. And decide to go into the business for themselves of doing animal control business. Sort of like a private industry kind of thing with just trying to, you know, monetize the experience they already have. And in the process of going out on some of their first jobs, they wind up catching a bunch of werewolves. And so I've read the first issue, not really sure like what direction this is going to take. And I'm not sure. I'm guessing based off the name, The Pound, that is what's going to happen is they're going to end up becoming werewolf hunters. That's my sense of the storyline so far. Comic was pretty decent. I mean, it's not my favorite thing ever, but it was written pretty well, and none of the dialogue gets really hokey or, you know, like out of character. Like, all the characters seem pretty well defined, at least as far as the writing goes. The art style for this comic wasn't really my favorite. It was a kind of pretty comic booky style, but a lot of the characters have like the I don't know, you know, that quality where like where people have like such a distinct art style that all of their characters' faces all kind of look the same,
right?
Even if they draw the heads different shape, but the faces all kind of look the same, and so it kind of suffers from that a little bit. Like, but I mean, it's not bad enough to the point where it really detracted from it. It just, I don't know. I don't really like that sort of like very comic book style drawing of art.
Are you saying you don't like comic books?
No, I love comic books. I don't like that almost like stereotypical style of comic book drawing. Like, I like when people do things differently, like try to do a lot of stuff. That's why I like Ben Temple Smith so much, because his style is so different from the traditional comic book style.
Oh, okay, I understand now, yeah. Yeah, I believe the Pound is put out by Frozen Beach Studios, but it's also being published by IDW. So that's yes. Some of the stuff I've been finding. I'm in the process of downloading it right now because I'm curious. I want to read it. I also want to.
Yeah, they've got the first issue of this series is up for free on the site. So, and they've got it in CBZ format too, which is nice.
Sweet. I will have to check it out. Who's it written and drawn by?
Written by Steven Nielsen and drawn by Carl Waller.
Sweet.
So it was entertaining enough at first. There's not a whole lot that happens in the first issue, but the ending is enough at least that I'm interested to read the rest. And it's going to be a 5-part series. I'm not sure if they're going to end up turning it into an ongoing series or not, but I'll at least give it a read because it could be an interesting story. And I kind of like Monster Hunter stories a little bit.
And you can find that free comic book on frozenbeachstudios.com. They have it available there. At least that's what I found, because I'm a douchebag.
Yeah, that's where I got it.
Cool. Is that all you have for us?
Yep, that's all I've read this week.
Awesome. Well, we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to be bitching about the PlayStation Network. Imagine that.
Hey, I'm Penn from Mostly Harmless Entertainment. Come check out all our cool videos and movies that we do at mostlyharmlessent.com. You can also find us on YouTube at YouTube/mostlyharmless. Check out all the cool stuff we're doing around Redlands and IE and California and Washington and the world stuff. Okay, bye.
And we're back. All right, AJ, so what have you got on PlayStation?
So, as many of you gamers may know, April 21st, last week, the PlayStation Network went down. They were fairly scarce as to updates of what was going on the PlayStation website itself, saying that they were doing some maintenance or what have you, which left us all pretty much in the dark. And for that matter, I got to give them a big middle finger on it. But eventually, this past week, they emailed all of their customers to let them know exactly what was happening. And this is what the email contained. Valued PlayStation Network and Curiosity customer, we have discovered that between April 17th and April 19th, 2011, certain PlayStation Network and Curiosity service user account information was compromised in connection with an illegal and unauthorized intrusion into our network. In response to this intrusion, we have temporarily turned off PlayStation Network and Curiosity servers, engage an outside recognized security firm to conduct a full and complete investigation of what happened, and quickly taken steps to enhance security and strengthen our network infrastructure by rebuilding our system to provide you with greater protection for your personal information. We greatly appreciate your patience, understanding, and goodwill, and will do whatever it takes to resolve these issues quickly and as efficiently as possible. Although we are still investigating the details of this incident, we believe that an unauthorized person has obtained the following information that you provided: name, address, country, email address, birth date, PlayStation Network, Curiosity password and login, and handle, PSN online ID. It is also possible that your profile data, including purchase history and billing history, and your PlayStation Network Curiosity password security answers may have been obtained. If you have authorized a sub-account for your dependent, the same data with respect to your dependent may have been obtained. While there is no evidence at this time that credit card data was taken, we cannot rule out the possibility. If you have provided your credit card data through PlayStation Network or Curiosity, out of the abundance of caution, we are advising you that you take your credit card number, excluding security code, and expiration date may have been obtained. For your security, we encourage you to be especially aware of email, telephone, and postal mail scams that ask for professional sensitive information. Sony will not contact you in any way, including by email, asking for your credit card number, social security card, and other personal identifiable information. The email continues to go on and basically saying, hey, here's some ways you can protect yourself. Here's some people to contact. You can give your credit report a fraud notice to let people know that when they're looking, there wasn't some tampering done with it due to this issue, and so on and so forth. Basically, PlayStation dropped the ball at this point. What happened was that they were hacked into. All of our 77 million customers were involved in this. All of our personal information may have been obtained, and before Sony was able to catch it.
Yeah, I got one of those emails myself, so I wasn't too happy about that.
Right. A lot of people are in a rage all over the place, and let me be the first to tell you that I am one of these people who have had their bank account information stolen. My credit card was used to purchase stuff on the on Xbox Live, of all things. Two charges, one of $49 and one of $19, which tells me that someone renewed their yearly update and then purchased some game. So, yeah, I'm not too thrilled about all this happening.
Right.
You know, as...
Yeah, I think probably a significant portion of people in the world nowadays have been victims of identity theft at some point.
Right.
Or, you know, financial theft. So, you know, and I've heard a lot of buzz online of people saying, oh, well, that's what you get for using the free PlayStation service. You should, you know... They charge like Xbox does. You wouldn't have had the problem. And it's like, I don't think it's a matter of paying for the service or not, because you know what? Sony offered that service for free. There's a reasonable expectation for all of their customers to have security for their information.
Right.
You know, it's not our fault that we didn't pay for the service. You know, Sony made that decision to offer it for free. It's still on them to protect our information.
And here's what people are not understanding at the same time. Yes, Sony is to blame because at the end of the day, it's their network that got hacked, and maybe they should have developed security systems in order to prevent this. Initially, when this had happened, a group known as Anonymous was being blamed for the hacking and what have you because they just did not agree with PlayStation's removal of the option to install a secondary operating system into your PlayStation 3. They had threatened them with hacking attempts and what have you previously. But when the actual hack happened, they were quick to say, hey, it wasn't us, we didn't do it. Apparently somewhere online is a YouTube video of some douchebag actually taking the blame for it, saying that he's the one that did it, that he took all of our information, he's the one that hacked the PlayStation Network. Right now it's being called the greatest breach of personal information ever. In history, 77 million people have been affected in this. I can't personally be mad at Sony. I can't do that. Because to be mad at Sony would be like to be mad at the Earth for being round. That's just retarded. You know? What I can be mad at is the hackers who decided that you're not screwing over Sony at this point. You're screwing over all of us. And you're blaming us for being fans and using the PlayStation Network. And that's what you're taking out on. It would have been a different thing if you had attacked Sony and ruined some of their stuff. But you didn't. You attacked its users. And that makes it a personal attack on us. So
right. I'm not absolving any blame on the hackers at all.
Right.
None. Because they obviously deserve to be, you know, punished to the fullest extent.
Absolutely.
For what they did. I just... personally feel that, you know, really the expectation of security was on Sony and not any of the people using Sony's service.
Absolutely, and you're totally correct in that. But at the same time, you got to realize that it took these people 5 years to hack Sony. You know, Sony, right. The PlayStation Network has been up since 2006, and all that time they have never had a breach of security quite on this measure. Sure, they've had attacks, but they've been able to fend them off. All it takes is one person. It's just like pregnancy. Millions of sperm hit that egg. It only takes one to make it active. You know, one's going to slip through every time, and that's what happened in this case. You know, so as upset I am at Sony being letting themselves being taken like this, at the end of the day, the hackers were coming after us and not Sony.
Right now, I think I'm more upset about just Sony's handling of the situation instead of just being up front and saying, hey, you know, this happened. They took the network down, and people had no idea what was going on for days. It was just a bunch of wild speculation, and then, you know,
right.
Finally they're like, oh, well, yeah, it seems as though your information got stolen. And right. That's kind of shitty.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you on that. The problem is that they I don't know, like any company, you know, you and I have worked for an ISP,
Right.
And I've been the support manager at this ISP as well as a provisioner. We all know that when an emergency happens, a collapse of the network happens, we're not allowed to give out the full details. We have to sit back and wait until we have something that we can release to the public before coming out and just telling them what happened.
I didn't expect them to just kind of...
Let me finish. So that's what they're doing. That's what happened here. I'm not forgiving them at all. I think they're fucking assholes. I think from day one they should have been like, yo, your shit has been hacked. You need to clear your stuff off of your system ASAP and keep an eye on your bank accounts from this day forward. They should have indeed done that. But what I'm saying, what happened was, is that they saw this happening and they tried to fix it without alerting the public. It's like mass hysteria type of thing. If the world's going to come to an end in 5 minutes, you don't tell the world it's coming to an end in 5 minutes. You just let them live in their happy ignorance until it happens. You know, and I think that's the steps that they took forward. I think it's a total bullshit maneuver that they pulled. And in that aspect, I am upset at PlayStation, because had they had told me previously, I'd have removed my bank card information before it got compromised 2 days after the network went down. You know?
Yeah. I mean, forthcoming, information from Sony would have been nice.
Absolutely.
But they didn't. They just took it down, and nobody knew what the hell was going on.
And I'm sure that the person that released that press release is his job is in jeopardy at this point, because he made a mistake. They should. Honesty is the best policy when it comes to anything. You know, you got to just be honest with us, because we're not all that stupid. 90% of the PlayStation users are computer literate and totally understand what's going on. If you just let us know what's happening, we'll take the steps to protect ourselves. But when you don't tell us, when you don't give us an option to put that condom on, then you can't get upset when we end up with a whole bunch of babies and suing you for fucking paternity case, you know? And that's what you did. You didn't allow us a chance to protect ourselves when you were unable to protect us as well. When that wall collapsed, you should have told us to get inside the house and lock the doors. And that's not what you did. You let us play on the lawn until a drive-by happened. And you know,
like how we went from a pregnancy metaphor to a gang metaphor.
You know, I'm all over the place with my shit. That's why I'm a writer, bitch. But, you know, it's been a week, and my time to be angry at them has passed in that matter. What is bothering me now is all these douchebag fucking asshole Xbox users are flying around saying, well, that would have never happened on Xbox. That never happened on Xbox. 2008, Xbox went down for 13 days. And they tried to say that it was because of the release of Call of Duty and the servers got overloaded. Bullshit. They were attacked by hackers all over the place. And they lied as well. The only difference is...
Yeah, it's going to happen to everybody. I mean, that's... Right.
The only difference is that they had the backing of Microsoft to help them out and placate them, you know? Sony should have done the same thing, but at the same time, you Xbox assholes, and I'm not saying everybody at all, but the ones that are on the forums flaming us for choosing a PS3,
it's just fanboyism,
it's bullshit though.
On either side, I don't care.
That's what pisses me off. That's what bothers me, is that they have the audacity to come up there and say we're stupid for having trust in Sony, one of the largest conglomerates in the entire planet. You know, they want to take this personal. As if, like, you know, as if, oh my god, my PlayStation 3 is down, I'm going to die, my life is over. It's a game console, you dumbasses. Why don't you just get over it? It's not a lifestyle. I didn't choose Sony because I'm a Crip or a Blood or any of that type of shit. You know what I mean? It's a fucking game console, and the fact that you're sitting here rubbing salt in our wounds and doing all this other shit is bullshit. As it is, a majority of the PlayStation 3 owners also have an Xbox. So... Yeah. What does it really matter at the end of the day?
The thing is honestly, you know, it really just seems more like an excuse for fanboys to attack each other.
Right.
And, you know, blame each other for the other person's choice, which is stupid because I think, personally, nobody deserves to have their personal and financial information stolen, no matter how much of a dick you are.
Right.
Except for
the hackers that do it. They deserve that karma.
Well, I don't necessarily believe in the concept of karma, but I think the hackers definitely deserve to be punished. I don't know that they necessarily deserve to have their financial information given to somebody else, because it doesn't really change anything.
Right.
But yeah, people should be held responsible for that, and I don't think that people should be blamed because they went with PlayStation over Sony or over Xbox. It's just, that doesn't make any sense.
It's just a reason to be a douchebag, and that's all you're exploiting right now.
So everybody shut your fanboy mouths, and let's just hope that Sony can resolve this fast.
And here's the other thing that's bothering me as well. On the forums, on the PlayStation forums, these people are complaining that they want some sort of compensation for the time that they're down. And I think that is stupid, personally.
Right.
I think that's an immature way of looking at it. A lot of people that are saying they're PlayStation Plus members are asking for compensation in the downtime that they are having. I, too, am a PlayStation Plus member. I've paid the $59 to have the service for a year. But what they're not realizing is PlayStation Plus is just a coupon book that they purchased that allows them to have free access to certain things before other people do. We get that whole, a brand new game comes out. We can play it for an hour for free before we have to pay for it. That's all PlayStation Plus does. It doesn't do anything on a monthly basis to warrant having to be compensated for. As it is, let's say, for example, you did use PlayStation Plus every day for some added magical bonus that you seem to think is happening. Well, it's been down for a week, so far Sony owes you a dollar.
Because I just think at this point, you know, the possibility of attack, especially, you know, with digital services, electronic services, it's bound to happen at some point. And you just, when something goes down, you just deal with it.
Right. It happens all the time. All the time. Brian and I used to work for an ISP. We used to have to deal with this stuff on a daily basis. It doesn't matter what you're running, especially when you have those arguments between Mac and PC users. Guess what? Macs get attacked too. Everybody gets attacked at some point in time. It's bound to happen. It just sucks because for 5 years, we all got complacent with our information. We all felt the security blanket that Sony provided us for 5 years, and we got sloppy. So there is an aspect of it where it is our own fault because we let that security information lie in the PlayStation 3 just so we didn't have to pull out our credit cards every time we wanted to purchase a game and download it. You know, that's our own bad for giving that kind of information out. But it is Sony's bad for not taking all of the precautions. You can't protect 100% of the people 100% of the time, no. And but this one slip-up that happened...
Yeah, but this is a pretty catastrophic thing.
That's what I'm saying. This one mistake that they made has now cost 77 million users to have their information compromised. Now, whether or not we deserve compensation or not, I don't think is right. I think if our stuff did get hacked and is being used, then maybe some sort of help from PlayStation would be appreciated. Like, for example, my $70 was stolen out of my bank account for Xbox. Well, I saw that the day it happened. I went to my bank, changed my account information, and now they're fighting Xbox to get my money back. That's not you don't see me calling up Sony saying it's their fault. No, it's me being proactive against my own banking information to prevent this from happening again and to get what's owed to me, which is the money that was stolen from me.
Right.
You know?
Like I could understand, you know, Sony like setting up some sort of a program to help help people that have had their information stolen to kind of, you know, figure out what to do. Like something like that, I do think that they should be kind of expected to do.
Absolutely.
But as far as paying people back for it, I don't agree with that. Because, like I said, you have to kind of expect at some point that something's going to happen. There's going to be some downtime somewhere. I mean, these systems aren't infallible. They're basically a loosely connected web of a whole bunch of different machines. You know, like, something's going to break. Something's not going to work. Something's going to go wrong. Somebody is going to do something from the outside that causes a problem.
Though I do want to know what happened to that network watchdog that was watching our servers, the servers go down and be getting attacked. I mean, for a server is, for those of you that don't know, a server is basically a randomly placed computer in a random location that stores information for people to access. That's all the internet is a bunch of networked computers allowing you to access information in those different types of environments. And that's what a server is, you know, one machine. Now, in order to house all the information and everything that's happening on the PlayStation Network, in order for you to play these video games at such a speed and what have you, you literally have to have a building full of these machines operating at any point in time. So the fact that this got hacked, you know, and got into has to make me wonder who was in charge of watching this as it went down and did very little to stop it except to pull the plug. you know. At the same time, I am appreciative that they stopped him when they did, but something happened. And while I would like to know, and all the world kind of wants to know what happened too and how it happened, right now my main concern is what's being done to fix it and what's being done to prevent it from happening again.
Right.
You know, I can't take back stubbing my toe against the table. What I can do is make sure that I turn on my night light so that I don't stub my toe again when I'm walking around. You know, it's the same basic function here. You know, what's being done to fix it?
I want night lights.
I want night lights, Sony. What's up? And what's funny is you don't see any Wii users talking shit. It's all Xbox. Wii users are like, well, dude, that sucks. I'm going to go back to play Mario.
Wii users are like, you know, soccer moms and grandmas.
Right. And Wii Fit
players. And little kids.
And little kids. And dirty old men that wants to pick up Asian boys.
No.
Which would be Brian.
I'm going to pretend that those don't exist.
Brian, you're almost 40. You're one of those people, okay? So yeah, that's the great PlayStation Network debacle of 2011. All this stuff is going on. And, you know, it's a tragedy and what have you. Does that deter me from playing my PlayStation 3 or force me to want an Xbox Live? No. I'm still on my PlayStation 3 every night. Netflix is still available. I can still surf the web. I still transfer my videos over to it so I can watch it on my TV. I still do all that stuff. I love my PlayStation 3. When the network comes back up, I will continue playing online. I'll be more cautious with the information I keep stored on that device, but I will still play it, and I still stand by it. Out of the box, PlayStation 3, to me, is a better system than Xbox because it comes with a Blu-ray player, it comes with a hard drive, comes with wireless internet, and it does all this other stuff out of the box for the same price that you would pay for an Xbox 360 and have less functionality and, yes, less uses. You know, I would have to buy those things as peripherals in order for it to work on an Xbox 360, which would at that point cost me twice as much money, plus $60 a month to play online. So for me, my opinion, PlayStation 3 is still better in that regard. I still love the games on it, all that stuff. So no, it does not deter me from playing PlayStation 3. But once again, I will be cautious as to what information I store on the device. So there you have it. As it is, Xbox is run by Microsoft, and we know that shit cracks down every 5 minutes. So Brian and I are techs. Like I said, we see that crap down all the time. We make money off of Microsoft going down. So we're vultures at that point. But no, I love my PS3. The only reason I would get an Xbox is to get so I can play Gears of War and Halo and what have you. But I've seen the kind of people that play those games, and honestly, I'm okay with Call of Duty. I'm okay with the ugliness I face on Call of Duty.
I'm too poor to afford either system, so...
Yeah, it really doesn't matter.
Whatever.
And I'm too poor to go out and buy an Xbox 360. I paid money for... This is my second PS3, and I love it. So I'm going to stick with it. And, yeah, that's all I'm going to say on that matter. I actually did a lot of reading this week, and of everything that I've read, there are only two things that I was really happy to have read. The first one being the new X-23 series, which is on issue number 9 right now. X-23, for those of you who don't know, whose name is really Laura Kinney, is a clone of Wolverine. She was created to be a perfect killing machine. She has two claws in each hand as opposed to Wolverine's three, but also has a claw coming out of each foot. She's been around the X-Men for a few years now and is the only character created in the cartoon that was transferred over to the comic book and seemed to have had such success. She was created for X-Men Evolution, the animated TV series, and was
So she pulled a Harley, huh?
Yeah, and was ported over. Yeah, Harley Quinn being the other one. But Marvel-wise, she's the only one that's been so successful at it. And I personally love her. I think she's an awesome, awesome character. Again, she's a female clone created from Wolverine's genetic material. Her mutant powers are similar to his. Her primary mutant ability is a healing factor with claws and heightened abilities and what have you. But she is also a killing machine. So the comic series X-23, which just started. She has her own series now. Is basically her leaving the X-Men so that she can learn how to function as a normal human being. Being in the X-Men has caused her to be on killing teams and to be in constant fighting positions in danger, while also receiving scorn from her classmates, all of them talking crap about her and not trusting her or what have you. So she steps down and just wants to go out by herself and learn how to be a human being, find whether or not if she a clone can have a soul and whatnot. And that's what the series is about. And it's pretty cool. I'm really digging it. And again, X-23 is one of my favorite characters, so seeing her rolling around like this is awesome. The only problem I have is that they have no faith in the character. Marvel has decided to have Gambit tag along with her to keep her company as kind of like teaching her how to be a human being and be more normal.
I have a personal beef against Gambit.
Yeah, so do I. I'm not a big fan about Gambit. In the current issue, she is going against her would be son, I guess that works out. She has been adopted by Wolverine as his daughter legally. So it's her brother right now that she's fighting in Dakin, the Wolverine's son. So that's the current storyline that's going on right now. They're in Madripoor having a fight, boxing out over who wants daddy's love. But I really like the comic. I think it's doing a great job. If you haven't picked it up yet, please go check it out. It's only 9 issues in, so you can give it a look and see whether or not it's something for you. The other thing that I read that stood out this week is the release of Super Dinosaur. Super Dinosaur is the newest comic book incarnation created by Robert Kirkman. It's being drawn by Jason Howard. They are the creative team behind Astonishing Wolfman. So if you take all the cool stuff and things that I've always talked about, the Astonishing Wolfman, and make it a dinosaur, a T-Rex, that's Super Dinosaur. Like, it's cheesy, it's poppy, it's crazy action, it's over the top and totally non-believable, but awesome all the same, because Kirkman just throws
it. Is it cheesy, like X-Cop cheesy, or?
Oh, X-Cop. I've read X-Cop, and I don't know what you see in it, but I think that comic is horrible. But it's cheesy like Invincible was when it first started out.
Okay.
You know, there's this kid and his dad, they're both scientists, the whole world has mutated dinosaurs in it that have human brain functions. Some of them go bad, some of them are good. And Super Dinosaur is one that actually decides to take up crime fighting and help the cause against bad dinosaurs. He has these mechanical arms that he can punch with and stuff that he uses with his little baby arms, you know, the T-Rex arms everybody always makes fun of. He remote controls his big arms with his little baby arms and beats the crap out of people and has missiles and all this other shit. And it's over the top and it's awesome. It's just purely awesome. So if you haven't had a chance, now's a good time to pick it up. Super Dinosaur is out in stores right now with issue number 1. It'll also be a free comic book day giveaway. So you can wait till then and pick that up. Robert Kirkman will be signing at Golden Apple for Free Comic Book Day, so if you want to head out there, you can do that. But let me know one way or another, because I want to know if I've got some fans with me or not, because you know that's what comic books are all about. I mean, it starts out with you being a loner reading comic books, hiding away from people, but when you realize you have other people that are into it and like it just as much as you do, it just becomes a great new experience. So let me know if you read Super Dinosaur and what you think about it.
Oh, I'll probably end up reading it because it's got Robert Kirkman's name on it.
Of course you will. You're so his bitch.
Yeah. He could, at this point, he could write a comic called The Floating Turd and I would still read it.
I'm sure you would. That's all the reviews I have for this week. Brian, you got anything else?
Nope, that was all I read.
Cool. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll say goodbye.
Hi, this is Brandy Offset of BrandyOffset.com, and every week I listen to Forbidden Panel's Panelcast because AJ and Brian are the coolest dudes that I know, and because I like to hear my advertising in between the panelcast.
And welcome back to the Panelcast. Well, we had a decent episode. What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, we did a lot of talking.
A lot of talking, but a lot of good things to talk about.
Yeah, I think we covered a lot of stuff, and hopefully people will not blink out like I just did.
That was completely awesome. I'm not going to edit that blank out, by the way.
Yeah, thanks for that. Thanks. I love it when you keep my stupidity in the episodes. It makes me feel good.
Well, it makes me feel better. Hey, guys, I just want to toss out a quick reminder for you. On May 5th at midnight, Four Color Fantasies will be hosting a Thor premiere at Edwards Ontario Theater. Chris has gone ahead and reserved an entire theater for us. It'll be filled with nothing but comic book geeks, and it'll be loads of fun. I mean, granted, Thor will be watched by all comic book geeks anyway, but this one's more personal. So if you haven't had a chance to make it out yet, contact Chris over at Four Color Fantasies. His email is chris@fourcolorfantasies, C-H-R-I-S, @4colorfantasies.com. For tickets and what have you, they're only $25. You get a free T-shirt, you get a grab bag full of goodies, and you also get entered into that. See? Make fun of me and stuttering, Brian.
Yeah, it's infectious, isn't it?
There you go, fucker. You'll be entered into raffles to receive like a whole bunch of cool stuff, like busts and trade paperbacks and hardcovers and what have you. It's an awesome time, and everybody should join us. We'll be out there pimping it hard like we always do, having fun, you know. So, yeah, we'd like to see you out there. Brian?
I was just thinking, if those portal guns from Portal were real, I wouldn't have to move from Massachusetts. I could just portal over there on the days when cool stuff's happening with FP.
How are you going to shoot the ending portal from there?
You have to shoot. I'll think of a way, damn it.
I would have to have the gun on this side, and you have another gun on that side, and we'd have to shoot red and blue spots.
We'll make it work, or we'll just invent a teleporter or something.
I think if you had the knowledge and the technology to do that, you'd have done it by now. You wouldn't be complaining about buying comic books and being poor. And
I just haven't had the motivation yet.
Purchasing downloadable content.
Well, we got a few quick announcements before we wrap up our show here. Got a new title coming out for Forbidden Panel. It's called Super Maximo.
El Super Maximo,
I'm sorry. And so pretty excited to see that one, so keep an eye out, because we'll be making some probably more detailed announcements in the future.
Yeah, we have the cover up on the Forbidden Panel website right now, as well as Facebook. And it is written and created by Jose Junior Lopez. It was also drawn by him with letters done by Brian. Yay, Brian.
I did something.
You did something, as well as formatting done by Justin White and editing done by myself. So it's a new acquisition over. You know, I was thinking about it, man. We're going to have Brandy's book, which is all about, you know, black folk and steampunk era. We got El Super Maximo, which is Mexican people, and ZKS. So we're like covering all races here. All we need is like a super Asian badass, and we'd be good to go.
Yeah. Well, I read
Brandy's. I mentioned Asian Brandy's and the cops script. Roll up. What's up?
Yeah. I would complain, but, you know, I know that as soon as I did that, my house would set fire, and then I would need the fire department. So I'll keep my mouth shut.
Portal the fire to somebody you don't like.
Well, yeah. As soon as I can invent those guns, I will. we've also got, you know, want to remind everyone that the Inland Empire Comic Expo is going to be coming up this September 4th. Tickets are going to go on sale in August after Comic-Con.
It's going to be relatively cheap, only $10 to get in if you pre-buy. Otherwise, it'll be $10 at the door if you're in costume, $12 if you're out of costume. Children under 10 are admitted free.
And from all of the reports that came in from last time, I mean, it was a huge success, so it's going to get bigger. And, you know, anybody out there in the Inland Empire is looking for something local to do. You maybe don't have a chance to get to Comic-Con. Go to the Inland Empire Comic Expo.
This was a triumph.
It was.
I'm marking it down. Huge success.
Yeah, but we're just going to just do portal jokes for the rest of the episode.
You know, this entire episode that we've been like dropping portal jokes left and right, I'm surprised you didn't do a review of it.
I was actually going to do a review on the website. I was going to write it up and post it. I've got a few reviews for things that I'm going to write up and post on the website. But that one, I wanted to take a little bit more time to actually write down everything about it.
Well, I'll be looking forward to it then, Brian.
Oh, I also want to remind everyone that our pinup contest is ending on May 15th. So if you want a chance to have your book published in one of our pinup collections and you want a chance to win some cool stuff from Forbidden Panel, make sure you get that in to us by May 15th. AJ, where should they send it?
They should send it to submissions@forbiddenpanel.com. If you want to snail mail it in, you can snail mail it into P.O. Box 1366, Redlands, California, 92373, care of Forbidden Panel. All submissions must be in my email box by the 15th at midnight. If you're snail mailing it in, it needs to be postmarked by the 15th, which is a Sunday, so you have until the 14th to snail mail it in.
So, yeah, a lot of exciting announcements, a lot of things coming up. Forbidden Panel got the steamroller going, so I'm pretty excited.
Yes, and we'll continue to lose that steam if Brian puts in really long pauses in between his speech, as he has done this entire episode.
It's what I do. You know, it's my thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I want to thank everybody for listening to episode 82 of the Panelcast, and just thank everyone in general for reading our comics and listening to our nonsense, going to our website, everything else you do. It's greatly appreciated.
Yeah, we really love you guys and appreciate the fact that we actually have fans. We're not used to it. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We really like you guys, honestly. It looks like you guys are really liking us.
All right, well, I think that wraps up episode 82, so... Goodbye.
See you next week, guys. Oh, don't forget to come see us for Comic Day!
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.